Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, with me Kusu Chuang, and our guest Joyce Chua. She's a licensed financial planner and CEO of Success Concepts. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, we're going to be talking about lavish spending, something I'd like to believe that one day I can be, I can associate myself with, lavish spending. This, of course, is seen by some as, lavish. Lavish sometimes has somewhat negative and pejorative sort of connotations, but we actually have research, don't we, Joyce, about the way in which people spend money lavishly across the region in the Asia Pacific. And just to give you some numbers here, 25% of Asian affluent travelers still look for information about global brands while preparing their trip. Only 16% look for info regarding local designers. So this survey was a comparison between local and global brands in terms of lavish spending. What are your thoughts on the question of lavish spending, just broadly speaking?
Well, it's very much to do with consumerism. You know how the new consumerism is today, where there's a lot of easy money. I mean, we even have new cryptocurrency, that sort of thing, isn't it? And so it's easy. It's easy to spend. It's hard to earn your money, but that doesn't really count. It's not really equalized. So consumerism and the Smiths chasing after the Jonases, that sort of thing. So that kind of trends have created a culture for lavish living.
Chuang, I mean, you know, people sometimes are dismissive or critical of people spending money. But in fact, isn't that part of the equation for the economy? People don't spend money, the economy is going to grind to a halt. In fact, I think the crisis in capitalism is often, a drop in demand, not too much demand, right? I mean, demand is essential in growing consumer confidence.
Correct. That's the policymakers' eternal conundrum, because the central banks, that's why they're so important today. Mm. They control the price of money as well as the supply of money. And without consumption and without the cogs of commerce and banking and loans and debts and mortgages are happening, the economy slows down. So it's the constant fine balancing act. But Joyce, you know, it wasn't that long ago that you had to qualify to get a credit card. It wasn't that long ago you had to qualify to buy a car. And you had to qualify for personal loans. And today, they're just being given out willy-nilly. So in a way, you can't really blame the young. And I just pigeonhole the young as being lavish spenders, because I think as you get older, you get a bit more wise to the ways of the world. So it's really the young that are quite profligate in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. And it doesn't help when, you know, we live in a society where everyone else is lavish and looking at having things. And also the fact that we somehow use wealth the portrayal of wealth as a replacement to our self-esteem. It happens more nowadays because of what's happening in the economy with easy money and easy shopping, for that matter.
Yeah, Joyce, that statement you just made puts us in real danger of going to this whole discussion about what happiness means and what success means, which is a yawning chasm of 5 hours worth of talk. That's right. And I have many times in the past.
I want to say, where do we draw the line? Where is spending reasonable and modest, and then becomes lavish? Is it always to due to your your purchasing power? I mean, whatever your wealth is. Is it always a function of that? I mean, if you're a gazillionaire, does it really matter that you spend lots of money on a yacht, or is there something else that we can sort of reach for when it comes to defining what we mean by lavish?
Correct. So because Joyce is a financial planner, are there milestones in a person's life that one can say, okay, at 28 years old, I should have this much. At 32 years old, I should have this much. Or should I be benchmarks along the way that you can say, okay, it's time for me to be a bit lavish in our spending? Can there be these milestones?
Yes. Well, again, the milestones are very personalized. It depends on the person's lifestyles and needs and wants and liabilities, in that sense. You know, I was just talking about the fact that you shouldn't keep anything that eats, for example, a pet. so that's expensive. Now, in anyone's financial life, there's always three phases. One would be accumulation. Okay, and that happens mostly at the younger age. Accumulating wealth, as in, i.e. could be savings and making it grow above inflation rates. The second part of one's life, which is the bulk of it, is management. You need to manage your wealth. And of course, the third part is consumption, which is the later part of our lives, probably after 50 or 45. So to your question, it would mean that, does it mean that we have to delay gratification until we are perhaps 45 and above? You know, so to answer your question, yes, there are milestones, and I don't want someone to save, you know, accumulate in their younger days just because they need to and they're depressed saving. There are also areas where you can spend. So there are jars that we look at, pockets that we can look at for different purposes in different phases of accumulation management and consumption.
I mean, I don't know in this pleasure-driven culture if we can ask first for people to defer gratification or even assume. I think a lot of people, you know, the news is so bad out there about the planet and such. And some people might say, well, you know, we might not even live to old age. Let's party now. Let's, in fact, spend our money now as we go along in order to make, you know, full use of our lives.
Okay, so I've got some anecdotes, and I'm not going to name the names of the companies that they were with. I'm going to name the businesses they're in, okay? I grew up in Penang, and I'm a true blue Penangite, and I consider myself Penangite first and foremost, okay? And I grew up with this family that are basically three generations of property, retail, and hospitality, and healthcare wealth, okay? And the scion, one of the two elder founders, he very famously, when he was alive, refused to change his Mercedes car, which he had bought in the 70s, up until well into the 90s, because he just didn't see the point of buying a new car, even though it was on the corporate dollar. I also know another company founder who has since sold the shares in his job search recruitment firm, who continues to fly on low-cost travel, who continues to backpack across Asia with his knapsack, even though it's worth about 300 million ringgit now. And what does it tell you, right? Delayed gratification is not as bad because you can still enjoy life and make a fist of your social life, even without spending the money on five-star travel or first-class, business-class travel.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes, and I'm from Penang too, you know. and Penang nights are known to be very frugal. They're not stingy, but they're just frugal, you know, gao kiam, not kiam siap. So the culture about YOLO, you only live once.
Yeah,
it is something that drives us to be, you know, let's do it now, you know, let's
especially
enjoy it
among Gen Ys now, right? And Gen Zs, because they have this carpe diem mentality.
Absolutely. And you know, you were saying just now about that, you know, we're not going to live long. But the question here is, who determines how long we live? What if we outlive our savings? Unfortunately, that's not really been made aware.
This is one of my biggest fears. And I must say that personally, you know, when I think about spending money, I think that at this stage of my life, when I think about maybe I have a good 25 years left of life, I mean, if nothing untoward happens, that I should be enjoying my money. You know, especially when you don't think about who you want to leave your money to. Even if you have kids, you might say, well, they can fend for themselves. I give them a good education. I don't need to leave them houses and properties. They can get that themselves.
Can we make it real for the listener, Joyce? Because as a planner, is there like a base case scenario where people must have, like, for example, one property under your belt? For example, 6 months worth of income, six months worth of savings at current cost levels, for example. Or should you have maybe some gold stash aside because as a hedge against inflation or fiat currencies? Is there like a base case scenario, Joyce?
Well, yes, you know, the base case is having, the first thing to do is to have emergency savings. That's at least 3 to 6 months or 6 to 9 months, depending on your situation. Then the property would be something that's overhead. It doesn't matter whether the property is for investment or for your own use. But the first thing you need to have is a property, because eventually you don't want to rent anymore, and also the fact that you need to have at least 10% of your income put away every month into savings, so that at the end
does EPF
of,
count?
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't count.
Yes, and that's the hardest part.
Why doesn't it count?
Because you see, EPF is about 23%. Okay, plus 10% is 33%, and there has been a research done that if you are in your 20s and you save one third of your money, today, every month, by the time you retire, you will have two-thirds replacement income.
Well, the power of compound interest, okay?
Exactly.
So the EPF has now increased the minimum savings level from 197,000 ringgit in your EPF account to something like 240,000 ringgit, okay? That's basically where the benchmark is. Do you agree with that savings amount?
It is a good deterrent from, because there are many leakages in EPF, right? So it's a very good deterrent to make sure that money is still kept in EPF. That is to put money behind bars. And that is the concept about saving money.
You're listening to Joyce Chua, the licensed financial planner and CEO of Success Concepts. I'm Sharad, also with me, Chuang. And we're going to be back on Ring in a Sense shortly, BFM 89.9. Good morning, Chuang, Sharad, and our guest, Joyce Chua, licensed financial planner and CEO of Success Concepts. We've been talking about lavish spending. Chuang really wants us to get some hard advice, meaning not this
words
lofty...
Words of advice, nuggets of wisdom, Sharad.
Yeah, pearls of wisdom, all philosophical nonsense. You know, what we want is from you, Joyce, tell us, you know, maybe
what
reflecting...
What do you know now that you didn't know
before? Yeah. Yeah. What's your life experience taught you?
Well, when I started working, one of the biggest liability that I saw my friends having was just go and get a car. That was the first thing they got. But what I did was I wrote down my financial goals. So very important one is have financial goals. And one of the goals was that, as I said, I must buy a property, whether it was for my own stay or for investment.
How old were you when you did that plan?
I was 26.
And what made you, what catalyzed this plan? Was it your parents? Was it your friends? Was it your reading? Was it Robert Kiyosaki? What was it?
Interesting. I was working in a corporate job. And it was, you know, it was nine. And I found that I had no time for my mom. She's 89 today. And I wanted more time. And I felt that there's no other way to buy time except to be financially free. Even if I had worked all my life and I wanted time back with her, no millions could buy it back. So that was my motivating factor. That's a very interesting question. So back to my goals. I made goals, and one of the biggest ones to buy a house, whether own stay or not. So how
property
do you do
or
that?
House specifically?
Sorry?
Property or house specifically?
It was a property. It was
any
a condo.
Property, just a
no,
property. Yeah?
I decided it had to be in Monkera. Because okay. I wanted the values to be protected. Yeah,
okay.
Hedged against downturns. Even though, sometimes we just get a property that's cheaper, but it's further away. And I find that then I'm just wasting my effort. I wanted somewhere good, and I know that it's going to be protected. So it was expensive. So what I did was then that goal drove me to get the fact that I need to be financially free and to spend time with my mom. So I saved at least 20% of my 20 to 50% of my income every month. And how did I do that? I decided, as I said, I didn't buy a car. I took the bus mini. I took a ride with my brother-in-law. I even we had this carpooling last time where you just pay the neighbors and then you go together. So it was tough. I had to stand on my high heels in buses and all that. But you know, when you look back, it is just worth it. That's how I didn't have to spend a lot on a, you know, depreciating effort.
Forsaking the social life, forsaking pleasure, the pleasure dome, forsaking all those things, because obviously it comes at an opportunity cost. Do you ever regret not, you know, having a bit of a ball when you're in your 20s and early 30s? Do you ever regret that?
No, I don't. But of course, I had a ball, but in a cheaper way. You know, at mama shops and that sort of thing. I mean, it was much cheaper then.
Okay, for us Asians, I think there's one thing that you can't sort of avoid. And if you're getting married, you're kind of expected to be lavish. It's almost, be a socially unacceptable for you first to elope, two, to have something really on the cheap, right? And so this pressure on young people, let's take the average age, you're coming out of university, maybe 3 or 4 years after that, you're getting married. People spend huge amounts of money. How do you avoid something like that? How do you think through the huge investments you make on an event that's going to be, you're going to be saddled with, debts for which you'll be saddled with for years after that?
You know, think about how much you have. And think about the amount of money that you can spend on that lavish wedding. And take a percentage of that. And think also about the impact of after the post-wedding. how much would you have left? Are you going to be broke? So when you think about and having an image about what's going to happen post that wedding, that is something that perhaps I hope can prevent you from, you know, overspending.
But Chuan, aren't there cultural expectations? I mean, when you got married, weren't there cultural expectations to have a lavish
wedding?
Well,
you see, Sherrod, my wife and I are both from Penang. You see, so that makes it's a bit of a double whammy, a bit of a double jeopardy situation. So we never got married per se. We didn't have the big dinner wedding in the hotel. We didn't invite 50 tables. My wife wanted to go to the registrar in the morning, mind you, morning, sign the papers, and go back to work in the afternoon. That's how much of a Penangite she is. Yay. And I said, look, at least invite the parents last. So that we invited the parents and they came. We had two tables in a Chinese restaurant. And that was it. We were done and dusted by 3 o'clock. We never did any of that gala dinner stuff, you know, for want of a better word.
You can always do it 20 years later.
We still don't want to do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you see, can I just point out, Joyce, because you became financially free at 40 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know now that you wish they had known when you're 25 years old?
I wish I had avoided temptations. I mean, I'm only human. There were temptations to buy things that I didn't want.
Such as?
Such as, for example, I sometimes double buy a blouse, or I remember buying a CD just because I didn't declutter. So one of the other things about being financial management is to declutter, know what you have, and the other thing is to shop with friends I had friends who love shopping.
Yeah, I mean, this is the other thing, right? So, okay, you say, Chuang, you can deny, resist social pressure. I think that's an extraordinary thing. I don't know how many people can actually do that.
But how fast time flies. I mean, we've all come to a certain vintage in our life where we've got to say, okay, we've made a little bit of money. Let's have a bit of fun. But I just want to ask Joyce one more time. At what point, in fact, did you have a number in mind? And that number, obviously, is your retirement amount.
Exactly.
Most people I speak to in my circles, we've all got numbers, right?
That's right.
What is your number? Or what was your number?
You know, in my younger days, 1 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Not now,
yeah.
Right? So I wanted to be a millionaire, i.e., asset minus liability, not just
net millionaire
by 35. That was my benchmark. And I definitely met that much earlier. So, and the second goal that I had, besides the other goal that I mentioned, is that I need to grow that 1 million because I knew the time value of money. 1 million is not going to be the same today.
How much did you get from the generation before you? Because I think a lot of us come into the world, some of us come into the world already with assets and backing, and others come with very little. And the difference between those two lives and their trajectory in terms of financial freedom might be very different, right? So if you come in with parents who give you a property.
I didn't.
Let's just assume all of us have not come from that money background, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because of obviously was it right?
Yes, that's right. So I didn't come into this world with money. I worked every single cent of it, invested every single cent of it, grew, you know, every single cent of it. So it is, just back to what I said, it's important to find the right kind of friends. You know, friends, there are friends who I had friends who just love to go drinking and, you know, going clubbing. And well, when you're young, you don't mind it, but not anymore. But when I was young, I just say, no, you know, it's only once a month that I'll do this. So it's finding the right financial buddy who can walk alongside with you.
Okay, so you talked earlier about shedding, about, you know, simplifying Marie Kondo style, things like that, right? At what point should someone consider the transition from accumulation to disposal and management? What are the...
Oh, you mean from accumulation, you know, management?
Yeah, from accumulating assets and buying stuff and getting returns and looking for flows and transitioning to management. Very quickly, we've got 2 minutes.
Yeah, say for example, you need 2 million for to retire, which is actually just the basic minimum to have the same kind of lifestyles. I mean, or even a little bit downgrade, you know, graded lifestyle. So let's say you need 2 to 3 million and you've reached that net worth of 2 to 3 million at that point where you believe you're going to... You believe you're going to have at the point of retirement, not necessarily today. So, and looking forward, what kind of, what do you call it, incomes you need in the future when you retire. And if that can sustain you to at least age 80, not 65, a lot of us want to pass on at 65. That's not possible nowadays. Until at age 80, then yes, you can start doing that consumption. And I'm in that phase right now. I plan till 100. So I've overplanned.
You plan to live to 100?
I plan to live to 100. Therefore, my finances have been planned till age 100.
You're a bit like a German car. You've over-engineered your engine.
Chuang, what have you planned till?
Well, you see, I don't intend. I've got a number in mind. I'm not going to share it with you, John, because it's a bit, you know,
embarrassed. 250.
No, it's a bit
tomorrow.
It's a bit over ambitious, actually. It's US dollar denominated.
Whoa, gosh.
But you see, the thing is, I don't intend to stop working. I want to work until I die, and I want to do it for two reasons. I want to do it for intellectual stimulation, and I want to do it for cash flow as well. Right. And I think I can, because I'm in that line where I think it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for a morning full of intellectual stimulation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joyce. Joyce Chua, licensed financial planner and CEO of Success Concepts. And of course, Kusu Chuang and myself, Sharad Kutin, we're coming up to the news. And after that, Enterprise takes over. Keep tuning in to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.